Attention Austin guitarists, are you in need of setup or repair on your axe even during these quarantine times? Well, I have the guy for you. That's Jason Swedberg over at J. Scott Luthery. You can find him at J. Scott Luthery on Facebook. Gang, I've been taking my guitars to Jason for over 20 years, and not only does he do the best job, but he has the best prices and the fastest service in town. That's J. Scott Luthery on Facebook. Don't forget, whether it's electric, acoustic, or bass, Jason Swedberg is your guy. Check out J. Scott Luthery on Facebook. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope that you guys are all doing all right out there. Staying sane, staying healthy, staying safe. Sanity. Jesus, that's a tough one. It just gets harder and harder, doesn't it? It looks like things are opening, you know, a little bit back up today. What are they calling it, like phase one or something? In Texas, like things are opening up in 25% occupancy, like restaurants and I think some malls and stuff. Anyway. We'll see how that goes. Hopefully, we'll get out of this in a safe manner, and we'll all be able to go back to our normal lives at some point. I don't know when that's going to be. I don't know. And that I think that's the thing that drives us all crazy. We just don't know. I'm finding out that, like, A, by eating in so much, I've saved a lot of money. I don't use eating out all the time. And, I've learned how to cook a bunch of stuff. Tonight I'm gonna throw on some Brussels sprouts and some chicken, some brown rice. Gonna do that. I think I'm gonna saute the Brussels sprouts. Maybe throw in a couple little grape tomatoes in there. That's where I'm at, man. You know, I look forward to my dinners. I plan what I'm gonna cook, and I spend some time chopping stuff because that kills time. I listen to music or podcast or something when I do it, and it's a good time. It is a good time, gang. I want to let you know this one thing. Thank you so much for listening to the show. First of all, I want to know if you subscribe to this podcast. It's available wherever it is you find podcasts. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Overcast, everywhere you find podcasts, Stitcher, new shows. I've been doing 3 shows a week for the last over a month or so, since back in March. And I think I'm going to go back to the 2-day-a-week show. So every Tuesday and every Friday, you'll get a new show of How Did I Get Here? Me talking to another great musician. Got some great shows coming up next week. Angel M., who's an amazing musician and engineer out in L.A. She talks about working on stuff, working on the Kiss 40th anniversary release of Love Gun and things like that. She's worked on some exciting stuff. She produces vocals. She talks about the women's perspective because there aren't a lot of women out there in those technical jobs in music. They're just not. And I'd love to see more. She'd love to see more. And so this is a good one. That'll be dropping on Tuesday, and then next Friday, my conversation with Roger Joseph Manning from the Licorice Quartet will come out. So you can enjoy that, right? Today, I've got a great show for you guys. Singer-songwriter James Hyland is on the show, and he has a brand new record. It's called Western, and it dropped today. It's out today. The record is a concept record. He ended up writing a play about a musician driving through the night from, through the country and switching radio stations between this old sort of like teleplay or whatever they're called, not teleplay, but like, you know, radio plays and this other thing. It's a very high concept album, and the fucking songs are great. He's a great, great songwriter. And the record is fantastic. I've been listening to it for the last couple of weeks, but he checked in a couple of weeks ago. We talked on Zoom. James Hyland, he used to be in the band. He was the co-founder and frontman of the South Austin Jug Band, if you're a fan of that here in Austin. And his record's fantastic. He had a lot of great people on it. Johnny Moeller, Warren Hood, Rob Kidd, Kevin Smith, the bass player from Willie Nelson's band, and Kim Deschamps. So yeah, it's great, man. It's a themed album, How the Transcontinental Railroad Changed the American West. It's called Western. Get out there and find it today. You can find him at jameshylandmusic.com. And I hope you guys have a great weekend. I'll talk to you on Tuesday's show, and my guest will be the amazing engineer Angel M. I hope you enjoy that. I'm pretty excited about it. excited for you guys to hear it, and I'm excited for you to hear my conversation with the amazingly talented and very, very cool James Hyland. All right? Enjoy this conversation. Let's get down.
Our blades carved from rock like the past tribe made by hand with tools of stone handles and or an animal bone. Let us say, so we've been here before.
I know, I don't know if you remember. I remember, in fact, I don't know if you want to save this for the podcast, but I remember.
Oh, we're going. We're recording.
Okay. Yeah. All right, cool. Well, I don't know why you would remember this, but I remember this because I knew who you were at the time. But it was probably 2007, and I don't know if the jug band, South Austin Jug Band, string band I played in, was opening up for Ian Moore, or if I was just along for the ride to go see the show with someone from Austin. But I believe you were playing with Ian at the time, and
yeah.
we were at the Granada Theater in Dallas.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had this like couch backstage. You know, their backstage area is so tiny that there's really no place to hang out. And I just remember we kicked it on that couch for a couple hours, and it was a good time.
I do. It was there were some other people there too. Wasn't that guy that passed away whose name I'm? No, maybe I'm wrong. Do you remember if it was in the fall? Was it in the fall? Yeah. You know what? I do remember that.
It probably was the fall of 2007.
Do you think
it sounds about right?
Well, I probably saw you at Momo's after that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, dude, it's good to see you again. And, man, what a great job on this record.
Well, man, thank you.
Yeah.
That's way too kind.
I was blown away at, the expanse of it. It's a pretty huge record, man.
Yeah, it took a long time, and it was it just kind of... You know, man, it was like everything else we do. It's this sort of evolution. You start with an idea, and it kind of grows and grows and grows. And I kind of found myself back in 2013. I had recorded a couple songs, maybe actually four, that ended up on this record. And it just wasn't like the band I had at the time. It just wasn't – we just weren't able to work enough to where I was able to pay guys enough to where it was a rewarding experience,
sure.
I guess. You know? So I slowly started thinking to myself, well, what's the long play here? Like, ultimately, I want to make music. I want to stay in Austin. What do I have to do in order to do that? And it's like I started trying to figure out, well, where are places I could cut costs that I've always wanted to have a little more artistic control? And one was a website. I'd always spent a lot of money to have other people design these websites that I had no creative input on, no creative control over. And so I went to this design school at ACC and just ended up falling in love with it, man. I mean, there was this moment I was in a design class, you know, that scene from The Wizard of Oz where they pull the curtain back and you're just like, holy shit, you know, this is like not as difficult as everybody.
Yeah,
made
yeah,
it
yeah.
You know? It's like, I totally could figure this out. And then I started to fall in love more and more with the design process. And ended up just staying in school. I finished out at UT, finished this design degree at ACC, and then landed a good design job that allowed me to have the funds, basically, to go make the record I wanted to make. And ultimately, I wanted to make a record that fell somewhere between, like, Willie Nelson's Redheaded Stranger and Lin-Manuel Miranda's Hamilton, but with some of that, like, Tom Waits Big Top in it.
Right,
you know?
Right, right.
And so I set out to do that, set out to do a lot of research. I literally went to New York to Broadway to go watch some musicals to see how they did it. You know, I would rent any, or not rent, but I would buy or go to the library and get any books I could about these amazing characters from the West. And the stories are just phenomenal. And once you read a lot of these things, you see where so much of these historical facts have been pulled into a lot of our popular culture. Like, when I watch Game of Thrones and you see the Dothraki, there's so much about them that seems very synonymous with the Comanche. You know, there's just so much about them being like the greatest swordsman and just these amazing warriors. And you just like knowing that history and then seeing that, you're just like, oh, I see where he's getting some of this, you know? And it's a smart, great, you know, it's research, man. It's what every good, designer, storyteller, problem solver should be doing.
Right.
So yeah, I saw Hamilton, I saw Book of Mormon. And I really also wanted it to kind of have that sort of historicalness, but a little bit of this playfulness. Although some of the themes that you got to touch upon in the West are just, man, they're violent, you know? And so it's like, how do you sort of address or touch upon that without, you know, being over explicit, like in an unnecessary fashion? You know, it's like you can get at the fact that something bad happened without being right. So descriptive, just to try and, you know, be, I don't know, an attention grabber unnecessarily,
all of a sudden it turns into a Cormac McCarthy story,
right?
Cormac,
you know,
McCarthy,
and
story.
Yeah, and it's funny. I did have one buddy send me a message. He listened back, and it was one of the greatest compliments I'd ever heard. But he's like, I was listening to this, and it felt like I was inside a Larry McMurtry novel.
Yeah,
I was just like, that's really cool to hear, because I try and follow this sort of linear timeline at first, that it does sort of move in and out of the future and the past. And I can kind of explain why that happened. But it sort of starts out with the people who were there first that felt most appropriate. You know, the Comanche had carved out this piece of land called Comancheria, and they'd fought off the Spaniards, they'd fought off the French, the English, the Russians, the Chinese. I mean, they were just the baddest men around, you know? And it wasn't until the Texas Rangers showed up with the technology of the repeating revolver that they finally met their match. And a lot of these Texas Rangers were also hardened veterans from the Civil War, so they were used to combat. They started to adapt to these Comanche techniques of actually fighting on your horse. A lot of times back in the day, these guys would face off with Comanche, who were just these amazing horsemen. You can't express it enough. And a lot of these old Civil War general diaries, you read about how much they revered the horsemanship of the Comanche warriors. So basically, a lot of people back in the day, they would try and conquer the Comanche, and they'd get off horseback and try and fight them. And the Comanche would just be like, ha, you know, and just ride right by, shoot, shoot, shoot. And it was just like, no problem. So they carved out this huge chunk of land that covered parts of Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, Kansas and Oklahoma, and that was sort of the frontier that Texas was beginning to impinge upon. So for about good three decades, from 1840 to 1870, there was just a lot of back and forth, a lot of sort of gaining ground, losing ground, and the history of it is just fascinating. And here in Austin, man, we're standing like right on top of it, you know.
Yeah,
it's remarkable. So I had all these historical songs, and then I had all these newer songs, and I was like, well, how am I going to fit them together on one album? And I started thinking about like my favorite rap albums. They would always have these like transitional bits that were like tracks, you know, they were almost scenes, right?
So
I wanted to play on that idea. And what I did was I wrote this overarching play that sort of brought all these songs in together. And so what it is, and I think you could identify this as a musician, one of my favorite moments, it's not being on the stage, but it's that camaraderie in the van after the gig.
Yeah.
Where you're kind of doing the all-night drive and you're kind of playing with the radio.
Yeah.
So the idea of the play is that this guy is leaving a gig that didn't go so well, and he's got this all-night drive from like Texas to Boulder, and he's playing around with the radio. And on one radio station, a DJ's hosting this Western novella that has all these historical songs.
Right, right.
And whenever they cut to commercial, you know what we do. We don't want to listen to a commercial. We switch the channel.
Yeah.
So he switches the station, and then it gets to these more modern Americana songs. And then he comes back, you know, every now and then. So there's this flip. You know, there's some fun interplay. I don't know if you guys ever had it, but we always had a CB in the car that we used to like to play with the truckers that were on the road. It was like the truckers' internet. So, you know, there was some interplay like that. There was interplay with the DJs. And so it just ultimately, you know, it was like 20 songs. And then to throw another six, man, the cost of this just began to mount and mount and mount. And just, you know, to mix 20 songs.
No shit, man.
You know,
Howie Weinberg. Yeah,
exactly. You know, that's not cheap.
Yeah.
You know, and he still, you know, bless his heart, he still cut me a deal.
Can I ask you a question? But, and I know this is in bad taste, but he did one of my records too.
Yeah.
like 10 years ago, and he had this thing where the deal was very good for getting Howie Weinberg to get to mix your, or master your, yeah, your record. However, you had like one callback. You had one round of like callback stuff, so you had to like,
yeah. I could totally see that being the case. He had done an album for the Jug Band back in 2010, but we were real hands off. The engineers had worked closely with him doing a Government Mule album.
Yeah.
So they had the relationship. So we just literally sent the masters a $3,000 check in the mail.
Right, right.
Didn't even say anything, and just hoped he would open it and be cool with it, and it worked, you know, and ended up mastering that album. But this one, I did talk to him on the phone. As soon as he heard I had 20 songs, he called me. You know, he was like, okay, this is a significant amount of work, right?
Do you need all these, you know, songs?
Yeah. So he was really cool and really receptive. He actually sent me two versions. He sent me one that he ran through an analog chain and a digital chain. And I, you know, not being like the audiophile, but having enough time in the studio, I could hear the difference, but I couldn't put my finger on it. And ultimately I asked, and to your point, I'd never heard back from him. I always heard back from his assistant from this point on.
Right, right.
But, which is still a great dude, Will.
Yeah.
And, I say, man, Howie's a busy guy. And basically it's like, well, the digital chain, if you like your original mixes, it's much more closer to that, where the analog has much like a nicer top end. It's got more of a round low end. And it's like, well, I want that bottom he put on NWA records. You know, it's like, right, give me that analog all day long. You know, I want that Beastie Boys low end. It's like,
well,
sign me up, man.
It seems like that's also the cool way to go with this record, because it is so organic, you know?
Right.
Because even the songs that are set in now times, they still are very organic, you
right.
know, acoustic instrument-based songs.
Right. And also, it's like, whatever I could do to help, like I had Kevin Smith on this album, who's just a phenomenal bass player. So anything I could do to bring that sound out, I was all about it. And same with Robbie Kidd's kick drum, you know, the way it just like, when I first put in the analog version, I was in my car, and I like to listen to music really loud. So I turned it up, man, and I think one of the first things you hear on the album is Robbie's kick drum, and it was just like somebody smacked me in the nose.
Yeah.
It's like, we got something here. I kind of dig this.
Yeah.
And, yeah, man, Howie, he's definitely the best.
You moved around and did this the record itself in different places, but the basic tracks, were you able to record them live? I saw photos. And
yeah, for the most part, we did a lot of the recording at ear. Some of the songs that I did back in 2013, back when I, you know, didn't have a job and was just trying to scrape things together, I would record basically wherever I could. I would take my computer to like Warren Hood's living room and be like, okay, here's a mic, play some fiddle, you know. But after a while, you know, once I had the funds myself, then I just went to ear. I just wanted to work with James. I wanted to use his equipment, his talent, his capabilities, his experience, and I wanted to get those guys in there. So we would cut the drums and bass live. I would do a scratch along with them to try and, you know, kind of
sure.
push the performances and things like that, and then go back, and we would kind of build off of that. But it was, you know, it probably took, I mean, we started in 2013, but we didn't get back in there till maybe 2015, 2016, and then wrapped it up in 2019. And now here we are. Now here we are in the middle of a pandemic.
Now here we are. I'm going to release it, and we're all locked in our houses.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and man, between me and you, as I started trying to plan this release show, I was like, well, maybe I'll try and get some booking agents to help me out. You know, ring, ring, no answer, ring, ring, no answer, right? So it's like, well, how hard can this be? You know, just reach out to the venues and see if they're responsive, you know, send them a piece of the music, let them know what's up. And man, they were. I booked a gig at Green Hall. Sun Radio was going to give me one of their Wero's, Texas
yeah.
Live
yeah,
shows.
Yeah, yeah.
Antones was going to let me in there. I mean, I had a full Larry David meltdown when Antones was like, yeah, we'll give you the room. They're like, can you bring 400 people? It's like, oh my God, I got way too big. I can't bring 20 people. How am I going to bring these people? You know, what the hell am I going to do? You know? It's just like, oh, pure panic mode.
Yeah, yeah.
But immediately I was like, well, maybe the jug band will put on their Superman capes and come save the day. So I basically just called my musical brothers, and I was like, help, brothers. And like true knights, man, they came to the calling. But it doesn't look like any of it's going to happen. Hopefully we'll get to reschedule. But, you know, one thing I do worry about coming up, the way a lot of these facts have been politicized, I worry about artists being put in tough positions where they end up burning bridges with venues that they just like, I know you guys want to open, but it is just not wise for us to congregate yet. You know, I don't know if I'm thinking too much, you know, because yeah, like some of my gigs haven't necessarily been canceled, but in my mind, I'm like, come on, how can we possibly pull these off? But I don't want it to come to a point where they're like, nah, we're doing them. And I'm like, well, my band guys are like not doing them. So like, what, you know, and I don't think it's wise either. So, you know, I don't want to burn bridges with people who have literally, you know, put their reputation on the line to let me back in their venue, you know, after being on like a 7-year hiatus.
I don't think anyone's going to down. Look, I don't know what we're going to walk back into.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And nobody does, right?
Nobody really does. And the way that it's really kind of laid out is like, you know, they're looking at really big gatherings.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe not our kind of shows, but like, right. You know, who's famous now that love it? Somebody
you know,
like famous.
Like a love it show, you know, like a big show, right?
Yeah, maybe there's not going to be a lot going on at the Paramount and up. You know what I mean? Maybe not a lot going on at Moody Theater, but maybe 310. True. You know what I mean? Yeah. Maybe the Antones will open up later this year.
I'm curious what that number would be, what that cutoff would be. Would it be 300, 150? You know, could you hold a show in the Cactus Cafe that's only 80, or does it need to be a big room that could accommodate for 80 people at 6 feet apart?
Right, right. Well, you know,
so much to consider.
If you look at it when it was dwindling down, they went 500, 250.
Yeah.
You know, it kept on going down. So I'm pretty sure the people that were doing house concerts before this are going to be the first ones back to work.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Maybe we're all going to be doing house concerts. I don't know.
Yeah. May not be a bad thing. It would be a lot better than some of the streaming stuff. I hope it does work out. I've seen people do very compelling ones, but, you know, it's a lot to ask a musician who does that full time to all of a sudden have a TV production set up in their living room that's going to make them look good and make their brand look good, you know. And
I don't know exactly what I feel like maybe my brand does have like a guerrilla side to it, you know, like there's a lo-fi side to my trip mm-hmm. that probably works out with. But I've done a streaming thing and I'm kind of doing them weekly, It's just my phone.
Well, good.
But it doesn't sound bad. You know what I mean?
No, it doesn't. And I'll tell you what, I was test driving this last night. Is this on Facebook Live you do this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I test drove it and I realized that when you do it from your phone, the camera and the microphone is astoundingly better than you just do it from
way
your computer.
Way better. Like, yeah.
So I'm glad I learned that. So I think as long as people are doing that, I mean, the technology on those phones really is astounding.
Astounding. It's better than my laptop.
You can thank Tim Apple for that, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, man, where are you from?
Originally, I was born in Charlotte, North Carolina. As a kid, spent a couple years in Kentucky, but grew up in Corpus from like third grade on.
Oh, yeah.
And in 1994, moved to Austin. And been here ever since. Okay. So I've been here the majority of my life.
Okay. And you grew up playing all the... What were you doing? What were you doing up in Dallas when I played there? Were you living there or staying there or visiting?
No. I was either gigging. We were either opening for y'all, or I just went up there. You know, Aggie Todd
uh-huh.
Gardner.
Yeah, of course.
Aggie, uh-huh. He was road manager for us for a while, and I know he also worked for Ian.
Uh-huh.
And I was a huge Ian fan. Like that album, Illuminaria. I tell you, is like one of the most underappreciated, greatest masterpieces out there. So I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe I just drove up there with Aggie. Aggie might have been doing sound. and I just went along for the ride.
Huh.
And was just kicking it with y'all. It's totally possible.
Yeah, because that was like the Matt Harris, Cullen Fuchs, Kyle Schneider band.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Kyle Schneider on drums, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 he's a good drummer.
Yeah, he's a really good drummer. So you live, you grew up here. Let me ask you this. Sorry to go. Let's go back to Western.
Yeah.
So you wrote a play?
Yeah, I did.
I mean, are you going to produce it? Or are you going to?
Well, you know, I have one friend who's an actor, so he's the first guy I called and immediately pulled him over and it's like, this is the part you're going to play. and we started recording it, and we did about three scenes, and they were good, but for the production value, I needed more people. And it was just, you know, I was at a point where I was just ready to put the music out. And there was also this other voice in my head that's like, you know what, if you put this thing out as a play, look, it's one thing if critics jump on me and hate me, like I can live with that. But if I pull friends in to help me out and then they start catching flack, you know, like that's the most uncool thing you can do, right? So it's like if I had a real budget and a real director and someone that could cast real talent, then I honestly think it would be a fun production to go watch. Because, you know, I mean, I had it all set out where you've got, you know, on stage left, this DJ booth where they'll sort of switch out. On the stage right, you've got, you know, the musician in the van, and then the band's in the middle, and there's just this constant kind of interplay going back and forth. So as opposed to the traditional musical where there's characters talking or singing back to one another, there's really none of that going on. And it's not like I would tell some people about this idea, and they would use the term rock opera, and I was like, don't ever say that again.
I hate that, though. Yeah.
It's like, I don't want that term. This is an album, okay? It's an album, you know? Right? So it came to that, and I would love to perform it as a play one day. And if there's any interest in the music, then I would absolutely do my best. It's just six scenes, you know, that help stitch it all together. It's really not a whole lot, but, you know, mixing and mastering 20 songs and then throwing another six on there, it's like, come on.
Yeah, yeah. Are you bros at all with Tito Beverage?
No, I don't know him, but I do enjoy his product.
His product, yeah, I do too. He did a play, I think he knows how to do it. Because that's the other thing, yeah. Is like, how the fuck do you put a play together? Like, how do you,
yeah, I know, I, exactly.
What do you, like, go to Zach Scott Theater with your script and, like, your guitar and, like, hey, man, check this out, you know?
Those exact thoughts have gone to my mind. Yeah. Like, do you contact them and you're like, do you have a list of musical producers that you approach and pitch these? Like, how the hell does this work, right? But, yeah, I mean, I honestly would love to write. I mean, the next thing I would love to write. Well, there's two things. The next album I want to make is just covers to say, like, my friends write better songs than your friends. You know, I don't want to write
anything.
Oh,
that's
anything,
cool. Yeah.
You know? And maybe spawn another artist to go, no, my friends write better. You know, just have it go on and on and on, right? But I would love to write a musical. I don't necessarily know what it would be, but I feel like this town would be receptive to something like that. Like, it could be, my dream would be to have, like, a mini Broadway here in Austin. I think there's the culture for it. I think people would enjoy it and appreciate it. It is a travel destination town to give people another thing to do when they come here.
You could also take it to Houston. That's like a big theater town too.
Yeah.
Like
Broadway
works their shit out in Houston a lot for a while.
Absolutely.
Like they workshop their stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. They're a huge theater town. It's a great point.
Yeah. Yeah. This is really exciting. What an exciting aspect to it, but I guess also exciting, but also overwhelming. It just seems like once you go do that, then that's just going to be your life for a while.
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, when you hear how long some of them take, you know, and you want it to be good. You want to have consideration for the audience. You want them to get the bang for their buck and really come out of there with this emotional experience. You know, I mean, you can't deliver the emotion and the product. It's inside them. You have to elicit it. So that's ultimately, that would be the goal. You know,
yeah. So, all right. So you moved here to Austin, and when did you start playing out?
Probably about 1997. I'd gone to some of these college bars, and I'd see these frat kids doing it, and I was just like, man, I could do that.
Were you in school too?
Yes, I was. I was studying radio, television, film. I came to Austin. I wanted to write for television and film. I wanted to write. So I always had that desire, but going back and looking at all my college notebooks, they're just filled with songs. It's like, oh man, you can tell a story in like three verses, you know, instead of
right.
90 pages, right?
Yeah, come on, man.
Yeah. You know? And so before long, I was making enough money where I was like, okay, how the hell do I get out of school now? And they're like, well, switch to liberal arts, get you a sociology degree, minor in English, and you can get out within a year. And so I did that, and was actually one credit shy. I walked, me and the university had this little argument about that final credit. 10 years later, I went back and took it. Another 4 years actually applied for graduation. And then I was done. I ended up going to ACC, falling in love with design. And there's so much to it that is similar to songwriting. I think musicians are designers by nature. They're storytellers, they're composers, they're problem solvers. And I think if there are any musicians out there that are looking for to do more than just music and maybe not much else during the daytime unless they have something they're really passionate about.
Right.
And I don't want to turn this into a commercial for ACC, but they have this brilliant design program, $5,000 compared to a lot more that other colleges would charge you. It's taught by a lot of fantastic faculty, some of which work at IBM. They're brilliant designers, and you'll get a fantastic job. You know, the future's looking up for you after that.
Man, I've also noticed that they hire like a lot of our, now that we're getting in the age where where yeah. people are diversifying their career trajectory. I've got a lot of friends over there at ACC teaching music stuff, music classes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I feel like people in our position with our years of experience, it's time to give back to some of these younger folks and
yeah.
try and help them not make maybe some of the mistakes that we made or saw other people make that we didn't make. You know, I mean, you always try and learn from the ones that came before you. And I think that's awesome to hear.
Yeah. I do that with the Austin Music Foundation. I'm a mentor okay. in their artist development program.
That's awesome. Cool.
Yeah, it feels good. There's no, it's funny because you do have to get to a certain point in your life. I couldn't see myself being so generous in my 20s. You know what I mean? I was a little more ruthless about my own success. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way it is, man. That's kind of how you got to be almost.
Yeah, and you get older, you're like, man, you want to keep it going. You want other people to be able to do it too, so.
Yeah, and there's something about being at that age, having that little extra drive in you. You know, there's just that little extra fire.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenal time to have something that to be that passionate about and being able to run with it like that. There's nothing like it.
Nothing
experience
like it.
A lifetime. Yeah.
Yeah. What, I know, I'm sorry, this is all over the place, but what made you pick up guitar and what made you start writing songs?
I had come across a couple artists. Steve Earle was one of them.
Yeah.
I'd grown up listening to John Prine. I love their music, but it never really, it wasn't until I heard Robert Earl Keane that I thought, okay, I want to buy a guitar. His songs sound fun to play. And so I went to, you remember Ray Hennings, Heart
of
Texas?
That's where I got my first electric guitar.
I got my first guitar, and I picked up a Willie Nelson Greatest Hits chord book because it's like, well, I know these songs, so it should be fun to learn, right? And so that was where it all started. I went there, I bought a guitar, Willie Nelson Greatest Hits chord book, and just started to teach myself how to play.
When did it shift? Because at some point, I mean, obviously you're going to school for radio, television, and film, but at the same time, also, was there the dream of this is what I'm going to do with my life kind of thing?
Well, not at first. What had happened was I was going to UT and wasn't making the best of grades. So they're like, tell you what, we're going to sit you out for a semester and then you can come back. So on that semester off, I went back home to Corpus, and my dad was working in Houston but still had a house in Corpus. He was renting out to a band of musicians. And I just stayed there with them and started roadieing for them. And I'd already been playing guitar a little bit, so they would pull me up to play some songs every now and then. And then by the time I got to Austin, I had this experience, and I would, and we would do 9 shows a week, man. Every day, twice
on
Saturday.
What was it? Who was the band? Just
his name was James Martinez. It was just a local kind of cover band. We did a lot of, it was like right on the water. Yeah. So it's all Jimmy Buffett, all Eagles, you know, stuff tourist music, right? And so I at least gained a lot of experience. And so by the time I got to Austin, I was watching some of these, I don't mean this in too derogatory term, but these frat boys playing these like country songs. And, you know, I just was like, well, I can do that, you know? So I went and tried out at this place called the Back 40, which was this kind of big famous college bar at the time, and tried out there, just walked in with the guitar. There's this small crowd of like frat boys in the corner that I was going to have to like publicly try out in front of, and was just like, ah, shit, here we go, right? going to get heckled at the first tryout, right? But looking over the audience and knowing, I'd say, I bet I know a song these guys would like. I did Kenny Rogers, The Gambler. and like that, man, I got booked for Thursday and Saturday nights for like, you know, the foreseeable future.
Dude, and, that is awesome.
Yeah, and just cut my teeth doing that, the solo show for years, and eventually also caught on at the Iron Cactus, and I would do some shows there a couple times a week.
Up on the roof thing?
Yeah, I would do roof, and then like on a Wednesday night, they'd let me play downstairs in the main room.
Yeah.
But typically, yeah, it was for a lot of drunk people up on the roof. It's pretty rowdy. And you're constantly looking over the edge, watching fights happen on the street. Yeah. It was pretty rowdy time.
Yeah. Those are always good. Those are character building gigs, man.
Absolutely.
They teach you how to turn an audience towards you.
That's true.
Because they're not there for you.
No, they're not.
A couple of your friends might come.
Yeah, they're there for their date and for some booze, you know? Yeah. And it's like provide some entertainment somewhere in the background for them.
Right, right.
You know, because they're definitely not there to that's absolutely right. And I think once you are comfortable with that. Like some people go there, and I've seen some people get upset. Like, you're not listening to me.
Oh, yeah.
And they're totally
not here.
That's not
the gig. Yeah.
No, it's not the gig.
It's a different gig.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Have you ever told someone what's what from the stage?
The only time I've really had it out with someone was we were playing in Belgium, real close to the German border. And we were playing some bluegrass, and before we knew it, there was this guy in a really thick German accent. And in my defense, Saving Private Ryan had just come out around the time, right? So everybody was a little on edge, you know, dealing with German accents, right? And I just remember him slowly heckling us from the back, right? And I just hear this Faster, you know, we're playing like. all our fast songs. And finally for the encore, I remember just coming out and playing, I think, the slowest song we had. But other than like little things like that, I've never really had to, like, you know, we usually have a pretty jolly crowd.
Yeah. When I was like 21 or 22, I saw Will Sexton play a solo acoustic show where someone was talking and he was kind of drunk and it was pretty obnoxious, the guy. And Will just stopped playing and was like, "Hey buddy, hey buddy." And the guy stopped talking, looks at me, goes, "Why don't you just shut the fuck up and let me play?" And so I thought that was great. I was like, that was great. You know, the guy shut up and everything.
Uh-huh.
So I tried that like a couple months later and I had to like go outside with a guy and like, charm him out of beating my ass.
Wow.
Which I did. But yeah, it turned out different. I stopped hassling people from the stage by then.
Yeah. Well, there's magic in that Sexton name. Just having that Sexton name cuts you a lot of slack. I'll tell you a story. One time I saw their father doing yard work across the street from my girlfriend's house.
Yeah, Mike.
I can't believe I'm telling. Oh, shit. Okay, maybe I shouldn't tell this story. You know, I shouldn't tell this story.
Now I got to edit this shit out.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, look. Let me. Everyone knows. Everyone that knows Mike knows the story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they know the drill. And it's not like Will and Charlie don't know it.
Yeah. I saw him do something he didn't mean to do that was semi-harmless and just take off. And I was like the eyewitness. I was like, you know what? This guy has provided magic to the music community. he gets a pass here. You know? I love that family and
me too,
and what
man.
They've contributed.
And continue really to contribute.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Will just put out an amazing album.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he's one of my favorites, man. The man knows how to write a song. I love his voice, knows melody. He's what a powerhouse.
Well, man, you are a great songwriter. Do you think, obviously, on the next one you're going to go to covers, but when you do your next original album, what are you going to, you think you'll go as?
I'm going to focus on singles, you know, like being out of the business for so long, I came back and they're like, well, everybody buys vinyl and most people like singles. And I was like, well, shit, I made this 20 song album.
So here's this three vinyl album.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, if I put this on vinyl and people are asking for it, it's like, oh man, that's going to be astronomical.
Well, you did release a single.
You get it as pre-ordering the album,
right?
Basically, so it's like if you pre-order the it's a feature through CD Baby, some kind of thing that they've built in. So if you sort of distribute it through them, they give you that option. They're like, hey, you want people to be able to pre-order it, and if they do, they get a song now. It's like, yeah, that's totally cool.
So in a song that let's see, I'm not going to use rock opera, but I will use a concept album.
I can live with
in an
that.
Album that lives in the world of an entire concept, and you're not focusing on singles. How do you choose what? Like, did you go like, okay, this is the most accessible song? So if someone hears this song, they might be like, okay, it's got a snappy beat, I can sing along. Or do I just release the first part of the story and have people go like, shit, I want to hear the rest of what happens?
Yeah, it's really like that. I try and cast the instruments for the song to the character, right? So the first song is about the Comanche. So you get banjo, you get acoustic, supposed to be very earthy. You get this really just crunchy, ferocious electric guitar from Johnny Mohler that really speaks to sort of the ache and anger that they must have been feeling at the time, right? And then, you know, there's the song like about the industrialist and the groove has to be very, you know, like that. You want it.
Yeah.
So I try and be very intentional. I like to cast the instruments like you would for a play, you know, and with extreme intent.
Yeah.
You know, and in the jug band, we just had to use the instruments we had because that was the band, right? It's like I play guitar, you play mandolin, you play fiddle. That's what the song's going to have on it now. But Austin provides you this beautiful palette. It's like, yeah, I know you and me, we both know tons of blues players, but everybody plays differently, right?
Different blues,
absolutely. Yeah. And it's like, man, for this one, like Johnny Mohler was just like, man, right out of, he was the guy to cast, you know, and he showed up and delivered and was so fun to work with.
Johnny's from that line of, like starts with Derek O'Brien.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
absolutely.
And those
he's
guys
that,
and goes down, you know.
Yeah, he grew up hanging out at Anton's.
Paul Ray.
That says it all. It's all about your influences. You know, like sometimes I see like on those reality singing shows, you see these people with amazing voices where you just think, boy, if somebody just given them a Ray Charles album growing up.
Yeah.
You know, instead of whatever their list. I see, you know, there's some really bad stuff being made out there that I think is hurting all of our collective conscience, you know, but I have to believe that great art can be great business because it does happen every now and then. I wish it happened more often. But man, for what we do, for what we create, we have to believe that or, you know, what the hell are we doing this for?
You know, there's a lot of that. Have you been asking yourself that? Like throughout this thing, being locked in your house, doing stuff, and like, what the hell am I? What? Because this coronavirus, and not just being in isolation, but just this sort of like the world can turn upside down.
Right. And with that, it comes, you know, there's always an opportunity somewhere. I don't know what it is. You know, I don't know if it is the idea of being able to live stream, you know, in high quality from your place and hope people will Venmo you. You know, I mean, some of those, they look like hostage videos to me. It's breaking my heart. You know, it's like, God, these
I'm worried.
These
I think mine does too.
No, yours looks rad. You've got a great setup. Like, yours looks very pro.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
I bought a disco light at the grocery store yesterday for like $12, but it literally makes like the disco pattern all around. You know, look,
oh, nice.
I'm trying to do what I can do. I only have so many cameras. I'm not going to put like, you know, $3,000 into something when I need to pay rent.
No.
Yeah.
And exactly. And we shouldn't. Exactly. Exactly. That would be such an unnecessary way to blow money right now, especially when the technology's in our hands. And man, if you have, you know, a phone that's been built in the last 3 years, you probably got some pretty sweet technology at your hands.
Let me ask you this. So you are going to do, you said you were checking this out last night. So you are going to probably do something for your release?
I have. Well, yeah, I mean, I have this one thing scheduled for April 20th with Americana magazine.
Well, that's great.
It is. But, you know, I'm trying to find, between me and you, I'm trying to find a cool spot in here to set up where you know, it can be kind of vibey, but still, I can't have the phone too far away to where the microphone suffers, you know, and just like, how do you find a compelling shot? I just want it to look cool, man. You know what I mean?
I realized the other day before I started mine with all of my sound checks and all that stuff that I was doing that if I had it too close, you couldn't really see the guitar and I couldn't imagine trying to watch something as close as this, as you're seeing me right now. For very long, so I moved it back, but then I realized I couldn't do any finger-picking songs, really, because my voice was so much louder than my guitar.
Than the guitar, it is this weird balance. So funny, I've been dealing with the same thing. It's like, you want them, you know, people need to be able to see your face so they can see and hear you sing, but the guitar is down here in your lap, so you have all this negative space of your chest and neck that is kind of not really important to the shot, but it's like you have to account for it, right? Because it's the human body.
Well, I will say this, is that entertainment that is immediate and was used to being done in front of people, even like Saturday Night Live or any of the nighttime talk shows and stuff, they've all moved to this same kind of... Did you watch that Saturday Night Live? It was pretty interesting.
No, but I watched Colbert, and he's doing it from his living room. I mean, everybody is. It's just kind of a necessity of the times.
And yeah.
To be honest with you, like a buddy of mine, Will Dupuy, does it every like Monday and Thursday nights. He also does his kids show every at 10 o'clock every morning. So
that's
parents
cool.
at home can put that on for their kids, right? But his looks awesome. It sounds awesome, and he's been getting a great response from it. So, I think there's something to it. And what I really like about it, at least the night shows, is that it's like having them in my living room.
Yeah,
it's
like
I can't hang out with anyone, but if I put it on the TV, it's like they're there hanging out, and they're very casual in their performance. So it does feel like we're all just hanging out.
Yeah,
and it's a lot of fun. It is nice to have some type of social release.
Yeah.
You know?
I have a friend that a couple weeks ago, when I was talking to him about it, and I was like, I think I'm going to start doing a weekly show, whatever, like a happy hour kind of thing, play like 45 minutes, whatever.
Yeah.
And he goes, man, don't you get scared that like you're training people not to go out and see you? Like when this all ends, don't you think people will be like, dude, I liked watching you like in the tub with the glass of wine, you know, playing your show on my phone. And then I was like, I'm actually more worried that I'm going to realize that I don't have to go anywhere anymore.
Yeah. That's exactly
and I might just
right.
become a guy that's exclusive to your phone.
Yeah, because I mean, you think about the cost of going out, right? It's just to hit the road, the gas, the hotels,
everything.
The food,
the
staff, you know, I mean, the band, all that, it's not cheap. And if you figure out a way to make money from your living room, and you cut out all those costs. Wow. Yeah, you're right. That is something to be concerned about.
It's a few
as an
geniuses,
artist.
Man.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. The guy from Coldplay performed on it, and he had three cameras, but he had like just some kind of cheesy filter making it black and white because you could tell his.
Oh yeah.
He was just playing a Bob Dylan song, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all right. So people can go to JamesHylandMusic.com.
Yes,
and,
they can.
It, So the record comes out on May 1st. It's a, the whole thing's available then?
Yeah, it comes out May 1st. You'll be able to find it online. If you can actually order, if you want the CD now, you can just go order it now. I'll ship it to you. I've started shipping them out now. You know, you'll get it a week or 10 days before May 1st. So there's that. If anybody wants it now, it's available. Yeah. But yeah, man, I'm excited to finally get it out. It's been a long time coming, and
it's a really great record, James.
Well, man, Johnny, from the bottom of my heart, man, I sincerely appreciate that. You know how the hardest thing is just to get people to listen to it, and the fact that you did, man, no bullshit. I mean, it means the world to me.
Yeah,
man.
No problem. I listened to the whole thing. Twice, actually. Yeah, man. Yeah. Once last week and once today. Yeah. And I'll listen to it again, man. This is a really, really great, great album. You're a fantastic songwriter, great singer. So you're out of retirement.
I am. You know, there's only the beauty of it is now I can just kind of, since I'm booking myself, I can just kind of pick and choose, you know, when and where I want to play. And luckily, over the years of being on the road, I've been able to develop these relationships with a lot of venues. And some are still here, some aren't, but... You know, if I want to go play in L.A., I can holler at some people out there and fly out and go play and then come back. You know, I don't have to play a lot of these places we used to hit along the way that could kind of be soul suckers or,
yeah,
you know, or just like, you know, going and playing for literally nobody and the bartender's upset that they have to be there to even open the club.
Yeah, yeah, that's a terrible feeling.
But, you know, I think about it, you know, I love my day job. Being a designer, so there's only 52 weeks in a year. If I were to play a little less than half of those weekends, that's maybe 20 gigs. You know, it's
not bad.
No, it's not bad. It sounds like fun to me too. And my main criteria right now is it just has to check two boxes. If the gig shows up, does it sound fun?
Yeah.
And does it provide enough pay for me to pay the guys I want to play with? That's it. You know,
right.
I don't have to pay them riches and gold and all that, but you know, I want to play with Kevin Smith and Johnny Mohler and Robbie Kidd, and those men deserve
to
a
be
respectable
paid.
Wage. Yeah, a respectable wage, and I want to be able to provide that. And if I can't, then we don't do the gig.
Yeah. Well, man, people get out there and check out this album, Western. Amazing record, and very expansive. And I didn't mean that in its length. I just mean in its subject matter. It's a You feel that drive when you're...
Thanks, man.
You know what
I
mean? You feel the space.
Right, it spans generations, but the space, the land is its constant.
Yeah, yeah. Great job, man.
Johnny, thank you so much.
Is there anything I'm missing?
No, man. No, just thank you again for having me.
Yeah, dude, thanks for doing this. It was really great talking to you, and good luck, and stay healthy and safe and everything.
You too, brother. Yeah. Stay in there, man.
See you after this.
You, brother.
What a fantastic conversation with the immensely talented and incredibly cool James Hyland. His album, Western, available May 1st. I don't know if this show is dropping before or afterwards, but I'm doing this a few weeks before this outro. So anyway, what a great conversation with him. Go to jameshylandmusic.com for all of your James Hyland music needs. This album, Western, is absolutely fantastic, and I wish him luck. I hope that he does turn it into a play. That would be amazing. And what a feat, too, right? All right, so James Hyland, his album Western, available May 1st. Go to jameshylandmusic.com for all of your James Hyland needs, gang. Don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast wherever it is that you find podcasts. We're actually available on YouTube now. YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Android Podcasts, Stitcher, Overcast, TuneIn. Everywhere you find podcasts, you'll get a new show. Right now, I'm dropping 3 a week. We'll see what happens after this shelter-in-place thing ends. I'll probably go back to the normal pace of 2 a week, but... Go and like our Facebook page. I pop in from time to time during this quarantine time and have conversations with folks. If you have suggestions for the show, if you just want to touch base and talk about stuff, I'm there. I'm there, baby. All right, James Hyland. Pick up his record, Western. Go to jameshylandmusic.com and have a great day, whatever it is you're doing, gang. Shelter in place. Be careful. Bye. Follow me, man. Today's a good day to die. The high ground isn't gonna help this group.
they're surrounded, nowhere to run. Soldiers were killing themselves with their guns. Thousands of arrows we'd rained from the sky. Behind a dead horse, there was no place to hide. Some broke down, and when they tried to run, we cut down every single one. That day, we met the bravest man we ever fought. He rode a four wide-legged horse and couldn't be caught. And just when it looked like it'd see another day, he took his own gun, took his life away. They were down to their last man, standing with an empty pistol in his hand. There were tears, but no fear in his eyes. My sword went up, today's a good day to die.